The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
He is an Army veteran.
Duty, honor, country.
And district attorney for Colorado's 18th Judicial District.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
Most important, he's a father and a proud American.
Americans love a winner.
He is George Brockler. And this is The George Show on News Talk 710 KNUS.
I'm brought to you courtesy of the red, white.
It's Saturday. It's 8 a.m. That means it's Phil Harding time. A good time to ask questions to super lawyer Phil Harding. Phil, in the past we've talked about what happens if the guy that hits you doesn't have automobile insurance. What do you do if you get in an accident and you don't have health insurance?
So you have on your car automatically, unless you signed a waiver, and most people don't, $5,000 of, it's called MedPay, medical coverage, that will pay for medical bills.
Anything. Oh, great.
And it doesn't matter if you're at fault or if someone ran into you. That still covers you. But sometimes people sign that waiver, and I need to let you know, if you go to the hospital and you're really bad off, you can sign up for Medicaid. You can apply for something that's known as CICP that will help reduce those medical bills. So even after the fact, well, with health insurance, right? If you sign up for health insurance, they're only going to pay for stuff forward. Medicaid sometimes goes back and pays for medical bills.
Do you end up having to reimburse Medicaid if they do something like that?
You do. Yep. That's called
out of your settlement or something?
Out of your settlement. That's called subrogation. If you don't collect anything or the accident's your fault, or it is your fault, you do not have to pay back Medicaid.
And by the way, Medicaid rate's not that bad compared to some other options like fee-for-service.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's not too bad at all.
One last thing that you need to know is you don't have Medicaid. You can't get CICP or anything like that. You can go to doctors that work on liens that will collect their money once you settle from a lawsuit. So attorneys will refer you to those guys, but only use them as a last resource.
Hey, this is great information. If you want even more information from a super lawyer like Phil Harding, I want you to reach out to him. You can go to his website. He's on the interwebs there at Harding & Associates. That's hlaw.com. Call him at 303-762-9500 to call and schedule your free consultation. When I got hurt in a car accident, I made one phone call. It was to Phil. You should too.
The George Show with George Brockler on News Talk 710 KNUS.
I'm dreaming of a white Christmas.
No, a little less than 3 weeks away here. Listen, before we get to our very special guest, I want to tell you about some partners of the show that I want to send business their way and your business because they're awesome, and that is RTP Roofing. You have heard their ads on this station, even when I'm not on here. Scott, Ray, they are two of the best products from Colorado. Douglas County kids who started a roofing business that's been going on for a quarter century, and they're the bomb. I use them. Not because I went and Google searched them or Yelp or any of that nonsense. I went across the street to my neighbor, Bart, who's getting his roof done, and I said, buddy, you know everything about homes, and he does. Who do you trust and why? And he told me about RTP Roofing. He'd used them on three roofs on three different houses over a quarter century. And I got to tell you, they lived up to the billing. These are guys that will come to your house. They will, from the road, be able to point out things that are problems with your roof. They don't oversell you. Frankly, they undersold me. They came to me and said, you could get this, but I don't think you're going to get the bang for your buck for it from your insurance company. They may lower your rates for this. Let's go with this product. It'll do this stuff. And they came out. They did a great job. Unlike some roofing companies, cleaned up every single nail and staple. I think we found one, maybe, and I'm not convinced it wasn't one that we'd already put there. But they also don't use subcontractors. These guys use a team that travels with them all over. They'll do it all. I would say this. You don't know what's wrong with your roof until the winter sets in. Even a little bit of moisture can wreak havoc as things get cold. So call these guys, and I'm telling you, you will not be sorry that you did. Call RTP Roofing. They won't take a dime from you until the job is done. Schedule your free roof inspection. You have 12 months from that, whatever that incident was that caused the damage, to get it done. So don't wait around too long here. Call them at RTP Roofing, 303-791-2223, 303-791-2223, or visit them online at rtproofingco.com, rtproofingco.com. Call them today, right to the VIP line, with a veteran, a patriot, an Aurora City Council member, Colonel Dave Gruber. Dave, how are you?
Very good, Colonel. How are you this morning?
I'm living the dream. Thank you for putting this on my radar, by the way, and being willing to come on and talk about it. Now, we're used to, at this point, some nuttiness in Aurora just because of the times, but there's something that may take place here within the next couple few days that will change Aurora significantly. Tell us about it.
All right. Well, Monday night, we have a study session, and we've got ordinances added to the study session that are or could make a significant difference. One of them involves Aurora becoming a sanctuary city. Another involves Aurora setting up a taxpayer-funded legal defense fund for people that are in the country illegally. And the third is a repeal of the pit bull ban that 61,000 people said we wanted to keep in the city.
Now, when you say, let's start with the pit bull one, because that one seems like low-hanging fruit in this way. You said people in the city have already voted, no, we don't want to get rid of the pit bull ban.
Right. The city council put a pit bull ban in place in about 2005. In 2014, the city council went to the people and said, should we keep the pit bull ban in place or should we remove it? 64%, about 64,000 people out of the 100,000 that voted said, yes, we want to keep the pit bull ban in place. So what's going on now is city council is saying, you know what, even though we told the people, we asked them specifically, shall we remove the pit bull ban, they didn't put the pit bull ban in place, city council did. So you know what? We don't need to listen to the people because we're going to repeal a city council ban. And so the discussion Monday night is whether or not to do that. So this is the first of three steps. The first step, discuss it at study session. The next step is introduce an ordinance at a regular council meeting. That's called first reading. And then if that gets six votes, it goes on to the second reading. If it passes the second reading, then 30 days later, it's law.
Now,
pit bulls are allowed back in Aurora.
This sounds like a model that they've picked up from somewhere else. I don't know if you remember, Dave, a couple years ago, 2018, people put on the ballot an attempt to put these giant setbacks on oil and gas around the state of Colorado, and Colorado defeated that. And then the very next legislative session, the legislature was like, oh, well, don't care. And now they've made moves to do exactly that. This seems like a tactic of the left. We want your opinion if it agrees with us. If it doesn't, we're just going to do it anyway. What's the motivation behind changing the pit bull ban for those on city council who want to do it?
Well, some people want pit bulls back in the city. Frankly, I'm not hard over either way. I've read documents talking about the fact that pit bulls are as kind as poodles, and I've read and that the owner is the reason the pit bull goes bad. And I've read other reports where they're saying pit bulls have a tendency, and when they bite, because of the way their jaws are configured, they snap bones. They have a much stronger jaw. As a result of that, police rarely use pit bulls as their dogs, you know, for anything that they do, because they have a tendency to turn on their owners in unexpected times. So, again, on my side, I don't own a pit bull. I won't own a pit bull, but I can see where people want to. This isn't that issue, though. This issue is that
popular will.
The people, yeah. And yeah. The people said no.
That's right. It's the elitist mentality of you just don't know what's good for you. Although I'll say this, and I'm not an expert in dogs, don't own one. I have never once seen a story about child or jogger run down and mauled by poodle. I've just never seen anything quite like that. A vicious attack by poodle.
Yeah, if I think about it, neither have I.
Yeah, that's crazy. Now, let's move on to this other. There are two other things that are going to be in this study session, and they touch on the same topic, and that is illegal immigration, which continues to be an issue in this community. One of them is to provide a defense fund. How are they going to fund that?
The idea that they brought forward and what the ordinance is that they're going to put they're going to create a division within the city staff to focus on the folks that are going into court for deportation, and then they're going to fund that with taxpayer money. The number they're talking about right now is 50,000, although there's not a number in the ordinance.
And they're going to use taxpayer money, taxes collected from Aurora residents, to help keep people who have come here illegally in the city.
Correct. And then the other thing about that is the we have to keep in mind, I'll talk about this more in the next section, but the idea of going to court, when you go to court for a case like this, you go to an administrative court. It's not a criminal court. It's an administrative court.
Right.
It's a civil court. So if you go in front of a criminal judge, the United States, whether it's at the federal level all the way down to our city level, we provide a public defender for you. When you go in front of an administrative hearing in civil court, we do not do that. You're going in front of an administrative hearing. So that's what's going to happen here, is that we're talking about using taxpayer money to help people in front of an administrative judge.
Now, that's weird. I don't know that we do that anywhere else. So, for instance, with the Department of Motor Vehicles, everything they do is administrative. I'm not aware of the state picking up the tab to help people fight to keep their licenses or their CDL designations or anything like that. This one seems to be particularly political.
And you're right. And from what I understand, the Supreme Court ruled that the federal government won't provide lawyers for people going in front of administrative judges either.
And
it's entirely political.
Because there's a trillion of them. I mean, the administrative process permeates every aspect of government regulation. I mean, the criminal thing is one thing because you could lose your liberty. I get it. But this, you're not losing your liberty. You might have to go back to the country that you're legally authorized to be in, but you're not really losing your liberty through this process. That is extremely interesting. Has this ever been tried before in Aurora, this particular effort?
No, this is brand new for Aurora. But to go back to the point, does it make sense? Because here's the counter argument, is that if you have a lawyer in front of an administrative judge, you have a higher probability of the results being in your favor. That may or may not be true. The fundamental question is it the responsibility of the people of Aurora to pay for a person who's been accused of being in the country illegally to stand in front of an administrative judge? That's the fundamental question. Is this the proper way to use city money, taxpayer money, and where does this compete on fixing roads or taking care of rec centers or paying for our police force or many of the other things that we do?
Now, I know what lawyers charge for certain things. $50,000 isn't going to go a super long way. What is that entity that is going to administer these funds to all these lawyers to help keep illegal immigrants in the city?
The city staff itself is going to be providing grants to law firms to do this. And you're right. From what I understand, the discussion at the committee when they were talking about this is $50,000 may serve up to 7 people.
Oh, my goodness gracious. This is just a foot in the door then, right? This is the camel's nose under the tin. Pretty soon it's going to be, hey, we can't do enough. We've already decided this is a principle. We need to keep funding it. That's crazy. Tell us about the other almost companion piece of this, which is the Sanctuary City piece.
Okay. This ordinance is very concerning because it does a number of different things. It limits the amount of participation or cooperation that can occur between the Aurora Police Department and any Aurora City Service and the Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers. So this has the potential to stop things that we have, we have a drug task force that's looking at different drugs that are being controlled out of other nationalities. As a matter of fact, they had a major bust earlier this year with 30 Mexicans that were involved in many different things. They busted 400 pounds of meth, 5 pounds of heroin, 4 pounds of coke, 15,000 fentanyl pills, and all of these, the major part of this was operating in the Denver-Aurora area.
We just had the DEA Assistant Special Agent in Charge, Dave Oleski, come in and tell us that the infrastructure for peddling this poison into the community are the Mexican drug cartels. This is a real issue right now today.
And this is a real bust that occurred in Aurora and Denver in February of this year. So what we're talking about under the sanctuary cities is that the Aurora Police Department would not participate in those anymore. That we would that they would not be able to cooperate with anything that the ICE folks do. There's other things too. Under this new law, we won't be able to tell ICE the people that we have in the Aurora detention facility. One of the most concerning things is a concept called safe places. Under this new law, there's going to be the city of Aurora. Every building owned by the city of Aurora will be defined as a safe place, with the idea being that the ICE officers are not allowed to go in there, even though they know that there's an alien in there with a warrant. So, and then that begs a whole bunch of questions. Like, really, how exactly is a person from Aurora, whether it's a police officer or an administrator, a city staffer, going to stop a duly authorized law enforcement officer from coming into a public building and performing their duty? How exactly is that going to work? Can you see one of our officers pulling a weapon on an ICE officer saying you're not allowed in here?
No, I can't see that happening. What I don't understand, too, is my guess is Aurora gets supported by some federal funds. And so it's federal government keep giving us taxpayer money. But by the way, we don't want you here in any of our other taxpayer paid for buildings. That sounds a little nutty to me. The bigger issue is, we are able to provide a pretty decent level of protection for Aurora and the 18th Judicial District only because we have such good cooperative relationships with our federal partners, including ICE, including DEA and ATF. And invariably, especially when you talk about drugs, it touches upon things that are taking place south of the border and working their way up here. The idea that we are now going to break up those relationships and somehow think there will be no negative ramifications to the city is outrageous.
I couldn't agree more. Let me go another step.
Yeah.
The other step is that the city pays for private charities to run things like homeless shelters and different facilities within the city. Under the law, those organizations that receive city money must ensure that ICE officers are not allowed in those facilities. And again, now you're talking about the Pinkerton guards standing there, gun to gun with the ICE.
Even if they have a warrant,
Well, if they have a warrant, they can come in. But let's talk about that a little bit, because I've learned a lot about that in the last few days. There's two types of laws that are used to administer the immigration program, very similar to what Aurora has. Aurora has traffic laws, and if you break a traffic law, an officer is going to arrest you. If you break into a house, an officer is going to arrest you for breaking the law. We also have code enforcement. So if your restaurant is dirty, if your restaurant is violating code, we have code enforcement officers who go and will give you a citation for that. So you've got criminal law, and you have administrative or civil law.
Yeah.
And I'm
right.
Explaining this to you, and I really
No, it's the listeners. I get it.
Okay, so the idea then is that if there's a criminal law or criminal activity, if the ICE is going after a felon, they get a felony warrant, and they can go in and arrest them just like any other law enforcement can. But the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Service was given special powers by Congress for administrative warrants. In other words, the senior officer of the ICE facility can sign an administrative warrant, and then that authorizes the ICE agent to go and arrest somebody administratively. It's identical, as far as the arrest is concerned, it's identical to criminal. And if you read the parts of the law, it specifically says that the ICE agent is authorized, when they show their credentials, it says, I am authorized to arrest you without a criminal warrant. I'm authorized to arrest you based on this administrative warrant. So, and then also, of course, if an ICE agent sees a person that they're searching for, even if there's not a warrant, if they see them, they can arrest them, just like a police officer could arrest somebody breaking into a house if the officer sees that. So again, the important fact I'm trying to get across here is that you have a criminal side and you have an administrative side. ICE is allowed to arrest people under either side. The other part about the administrative side, and then going to these hearings that we're talking about, when a person is arrested under an administrative warrant, that person goes to an administrative court. That's that hearing we were just talking about a minute ago. If they fail in that administrative hearing and say the judge says you have to leave and they deport that person, when that person goes back home, that person doesn't have a criminal record. Because it wasn't a criminal case. It was
right.
An administrative
right.
case. So the person goes home. He's got an administrative case against him. That person can reapply for or to enter the United States
lawfully.
Just like anybody else.
Yeah, lawfully.
And they don't have a criminal record.
Yeah, Dave, this is concerning. And the other thing that I don't think that these elitists on the left think about when they do stuff like this is that these decisions may seem like they're made for Aurora, but as you know, the borders are invisible. And whatever crime and lawlessness the Aurora City Council invites into Aurora spills out into the rest of the community, whether it's Denver or to the north in Adams or here in Arapahoe County, and it's outrageous. How can people, one, monitor this quote-unquote study session, and two, what impact can they have in trying to change these decisions?
The Aurora, if you go to the Aurora City website, you know, auroragov.org, there's information there on how to watch the hearings on the web. We put that out on the web. Or you can go to Channel 8 if you're on Comcast in the city of Aurora, or you can go to auroratv.org and watch it there.
Okay, that's great. Dave, I want to have you back on after this, if you don't mind, maybe even next week to talk about what the heck happened. Were we able to keep this nuttiness from taking place, or where'd it go?
Thanks, George. I'd appreciate that.
Thanks, Colonel. That is Dave Gruber, Aurora City Council member, apparently one of the sane ones, talking about some of the proposals coming up on this Monday. Go online and I may try to do that too, watch some of this stuff. Look, when we come back, we're going to be joined by show business sponsor, but also just a super smart guy who has taken a look at the data on this election stuff. He's going to update us on what he's found so far and maybe what's next. George Brockman on The George Show, 710 KNUS.
Now, back to The George Show with George Brockman on News Talk 710 KNUS.
That's Deck the Halls from back in 1912. No, I'm making that up. George Brockman back here on the 710 KNUS George Show. Let's go right to our VIP line. Show sponsor, but also super good guy and very dedicated to trying to figure out what just happened here in November and what can be done about it moving forward. Our buddy, Joe Altman. Joe, thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, George.
Now, listen, I've been listening to you on Randy now for weeks, really, since the election. We're a month removed from it, and this stuff is still being figured out. Look, on an unrelated note, we still don't, as of this moment, know who even the district attorney is in the jurisdiction you and I are in. And in a modern society where we have voting and we've been doing it for centuries, I don't get how that's possible, but here we are. In terms of the
wait, are you talking about John?
Yeah,
Gunner.
Yeah,
that's up in the air again, huh?
And I say up in the air only in that it is not official. Now he has a 1,430 or something vote lead, and nobody expects the machine recount to upend that. And if it did, Joe, we'd probably be calling you to do some of your voodoo there to figure it out, because that would be a sure sign of corruption and fraud. But it's a month removed, and there has been no formal declaration by the clerks and recorders, by the Secretary of State. It is still technically unknown. And what that's done is really frozen John from making some big decisions about personnel and some budget stuff, because he doesn't have really that locked in authority. But having said that, look, at the presidential level, we have seen some ebbs and flows. I've just now recently seen some crazy video coming out of Georgia with boxes being taken out from under tables. Can you update us? Where are we with the presidential election and what's next?
Well, right now we have recounts and audits in three states, so Arizona, Michigan, and Georgia. Pennsylvania, 76 of the state house Republicans actually sent a letter to Congress saying not to accept electors from Pennsylvania. There's massive amounts of fraud happening everywhere, and frankly, you still have the weaponized media and the tech companies that are saying, oh, there's nothing to see here. Even given some of the videos that, you know, obviously came out a couple days ago in Georgia, and then some of the damning even admissions that the two women that are on that video actually put out there on their Instagram page and Facebook page. So it's you know, these are unprecedented times, because the amount of fraud that we're dealing with is so it seems like it's a concerted effort by a bunch of people coming together. but there's so many different ways that they're actually cheating. But one of the biggest ways, obviously, is with the Dominion voting system.
Does it seem then to you that, and look, I'll concede this, I think there's probably some level of fraud that takes place in every election, but it's never been, at least that I know of, enough to upend the overall outcome. Is what you're finding a level of fraud that would change the outcome of this election?
Yeah, so in one county alone, in one district alone, in Michigan, the voter turnout was 721% of the total number percentage of voters that could vote. And four
what? 721%?
Yeah, 721%.
I don't understand that. I get over 100% because you could have same-day registration. People show up and vote
Absolutely.
Right then and there. But 721%? And what does the Secretary of State or the clerk or whatever they call the election official out there say about that?
Well, they said, please do me a favor and wipe down the election equipment while they're one side of the mouth saying, yeah, we'll concede to an audit, and then sending out emails and correspondence to people in their district saying, I need you to wipe these systems as quickly as possible. So, I mean, look, the amount of corruption that we're dealing with in our government is unprecedented. And, you know, and this isn't just me. This isn't just hyperbole. This isn't me just talking about this. This is a documented fact. We're ignoring science, we're ignoring math, we're ignoring these videos that you see out there. And frankly, the thing that should concern every American is the fact that you don't have a voice. We went straight from being a constitutional republic to being a communist nation when the mirage of freedom actually exists, but freedom itself or the ability to choose your leadership doesn't exist.
When you say communist, why do you say that?
Just because of if we can't get our elections straight and we're allowing people to choose our leadership for us, but telling us, hey, go vote. This is, you know, we're gonna hear the voice of the American people, both at a local level, all the way up to obviously the president of the United States. And you look at communist nations and what those nations actually stand for. You know, China, where the current president gets 97% of the vote. Well, we know that's not true. Right. That's a machine of propaganda inside of China. So if we do the same thing here and we allow someone to steal our election, then in essence, we're becoming a communist nation. We just set aside our constitution, much like what they're doing with this pandemic and shutting down small businesses and telling the business people that COVID only exists in your restaurants, but doesn't exist in Target and Walmart and Home Depot.
Now we're talking to Joe Altman, Joe, you've done so much more reading and research on this than I have, but let me ask you some questions that I get too during this. So the thing in Georgia with the video, and if people haven't seen it, you got to go out there and Google this thing. It's pretty fresh. The place gets closed down for vote counting, and yet there's still video of the interior, and these workers take these boxes out from under this table, and they appear to start doing the things you would do to count votes. That seems super suspicious to me. In the article that I read that came with it, though, it says that the election officials who watched the video said this doesn't seem unusual to and they're Republicans. There are Republicans, including the Secretary of State, who are like, this doesn't seem that unusual to me. This seems like the normal course of business. Whether or not people were there to observe them, this doesn't look like fraud. What do you say to that?
It's absolute fraud. Why did they send home all the poll watchers? And by the way, at the same time in every swing state, why did they send home the poll watchers and then resume counting of the ballots? It may not be suspicious that they're actually counting ballots. It may not be suspicious that they're taking ballots out. But the fact that they're taking those ballots out in the middle of basically the night and doing it without any sort of oversight is very, very suspicious. And frankly, It goes to, if you just match up the time frames, you'll see that that's when the big spike happened for Joe Biden, was when there was no poll watchers there. They were pulling out these ballots, and there was no one there to actually even validate that these ballots were even legitimate.
What do you say though when folks push back and go, wait, if this was like Democrat-controlled election process? I get it. But we're talking about Republicans who have every interest in wanting to see a Republican maintain not only control of the Senate, but of the White House. What's going on? Are they part
of
it?
Really?
What? Say that again.
Do they really?
I would think that they, I don't know these people. I would think that they do. I do. You know, I'm a Republican. I want to see us maintained.
Listen, the problem with you and me and most Republicans or conservatives, even if they're not Republican, they're independent, is that they believe in the better good of people. Right, they believe that people want to, you know, they're going to be honest. They believe that the election will be honest. That no one would want to fix an election. Right, that's the normal mindset that you have. But just because they wear the badge of being a Republican does not mean they're a Republican. Does not mean that there's not self-interest. Does not mean that there's not someone behind the. There's just as many Republicans that have done bad things in our country than there has been Democrats.
Do you think that what they're doing is a product of them being part of this purported corruption, or do you think it's apathy, or, hey, I just can't believe this would take place? What do you think is motivating some of these Republican officials to sort of be like, nah?
I think it's a lack of courage and a lack of understanding how it affects them, right?
Yeah.
There's plenty of Republicans that don't like strong leadership. President Trump represents a very he's strong leadership, right? You may not like what he has to say, but he tells you exactly what he thinks, unfiltered.
True.
With you know, very transparently. So there's a lot of people that don't like that in people, leaders of at any level, whether it be in business or in our government.
Here's another question that I've gotten, and that is, look, if this thing was the product of fraud in an attempt to try to bring down the Republican president, why was it only the Republican president that seems to have been affected? And what they point to is they're like, look, Republicans maintain control of every single chamber of the state legislature that was up. They even gained two in New Hampshire. They won the governorship and the senatorship in Montana. I mean, look, if there's corruption and it's widespread and it's dominion, which is in a jillion states and all that, why didn't we see bigger victories for Democrats in general as opposed to just Donald Trump's loss?
Well, because of the fact that he can do weighted averages with these computer systems, right? So they can just weight average this the president. I believe that there was a massive red wave that came across the United States in every state, including California, where they picked up the biggest gains
that
they have
true.
In 3 decades.
True.
Right.
So and the president got more votes than any other than Biden than any person ever running for president.
Right. Right. And so I think what happened is they got very messy. I mean, mathematically, Dr. Shiva came out and did a mathematical equation that's based off of three different types of algorithms that show whether or not there was fraud or illegal activity that happened in the election. And his findings, he's an MIT math guy, are not uncommon to other mathematicians across the nation that have done the same analysis. You know, you can explain away one thing, maybe two things. But you can't explain away the anomalies and the things that have happened across our entire country in nearly every state. And, George, we have to start talking about Colorado. You know, I had a conversation with Ken Buck. I was very upset over the fact that he had a call. And on that call, he's like, our election in Colorado is the safest ever. And I fired back and said, this is what I'm talking about. This is the reason why people don't trust Republican leadership is because they don't question things because you can explain it away in an hour and a half, right?
Well, for what it's worth, I've toured the different vote counting places for Arapahoe County, for Denver. I mean, those are two of the biggest, not El Paso, but that would have been the third biggest. But I've toured two of them. It looks to me like they have built in a significant amount of oversight, scrutiny, and redundancy to try to make this election not perfect. I mean, there's always going to be flaws, something we ought to look at, but pretty darn safe. Where do you think the weak link is in Colorado elections?
I mean, and with all due respect, you're wrong. I think you won the election in 2018. I think the amount of corruption that happens in Arapahoe, Denver, Jefferson County specifically is ginormous. And I think that we have to start looking at how they actually have these audit systems so they can do poll audits where they took out samplings and say, okay, did this person vote for this person, vote for this person. But I think that if you do a hand count, especially this year, you will find a drastic change in what is the election results for Jefferson, Denver, and Arapahoe County versus what the scanners 4.0 tabulation system for Dominion shows.
Is the audit insufficient to catch that? Is the audit they do this post-election audit, is that insufficient to catch it?
Way insufficient, right? Samplings, I can make a sampling still show that they voted for you. I can make that sampling show that those are absolutely, when you pull those out, the tabulation will show that person voted for you. it will absolutely verify to those particular votes and who they voted for. What it doesn't show you is what the system is capable of doing through the firmware inside of the system as it tabulates to the final numbers. So until you do an actual hand count, you will not be able to see the massive difference between and making sure that the final tally was on a hand count. You'd be able to see this. The final tally was exactly what went into the machine to begin with.
What happened with Georgia? Because they did do the hand count.
No, they didn't. I did the hand count. They counted all the same. They counted all the same ballots based on in Georgia they have massive problems, but two of the biggest problems that they have is garbage in, garbage out. So they did a hand count of the ballots, right?
Yeah.
But the hand count that they did of those ballots was inside of that those two counties were specifically bad ballots, good ballots, no signatures. They just stacked up ballots, right? So you just count the ballots that are all stacked up. There was no analysis that was done on whether or not those ballots were actually legitimate.
Now, Joel, listen, and we only have a couple minutes left, and I told you I wanted to get to this part. What's next? I mean, if you're out there thinking, is there any chance at all that the outcome changes, where are the rays of hope for people listening to 710?
Yeah, so listen, I think that the chances of it changing are in our favor. I mean, there's way too much fraud that's occurring. And my problem that I have is why isn't the DOJ, why isn't the FBI investigating some of these irregularities? How is it that I can actually do research on Eric Coomer, who is not just a strategy and security guy and he's in our state, I can do research on him and find shadow companies and things that he does overseas and financial connections to the Soros organization and other very seedy operations and people. How is it that I can find that stuff, but the DOJ and the FBI can't? So I find that, you know, what we're up against right now is an establishment that is destroying the integrity of our
own. This is such an important topic and such fascinating stuff that you found. Has anybody had you on yet with like a Matt Crane, who I know Randy knows Matt and likes Matt and all that stuff too, but have you ever done that sort of, I think it would be fascinating for you two to have a conversation about, look, here's where the weak link is. No, that's not a weak link. And then have you ever done anything like that?
No, you look, I've done almost 200 interviews over the last 3 weeks.
Wow.
So I've done everything from, all the way up ticket, down ticket. I haven't done the mainstream media because frankly, they don't have any interest in
talking about
truth. Right. So, but I've done Malkin, AON, Newsmax, and I've talked a little bit about, you know, what we're up against as an environment. And then I just continue to do more research on Dominion voting systems.
I know how busy you are. So if you listen, this is what I'll do. We only have a few seconds left. If you don't mind, I will try to put something together if you're down. And frankly, I don't know Matt's schedule either. And just see if we can't have this conversation, because I know nothing's perfect about this system. But if there are things that are exploitable that can be fixed, my goodness, we need to fix them. And right now, that's even separate from the idea of what do we do with what just took place in November. But we got to fix this thing moving forward or people are going to stop trusting the election system.
Yeah, and I think that erosion of trust has already occurred. But yeah, I'd be definitely up for that.
Joel Altman, thank you, buddy. And right after we get off the phone and we come back, you're going to hear me pitch your awesome business, PIN Business Network. Thank you for doing this, Joe. I appreciate it, man. See you soon.
All right, God bless you.
All right, amigo. That's Joe Altman. When we come back, we're going to finish up our final segment before we turn over control of this here microphone to a guy named Liberty Esquire Randy Corcoran, who's probably got 8 million more things on this topic than even I was able to get to with Joe Altman. When we come back, George Show, 710 KNUS.
The George Show with George Brockler on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Well, we're back here for the final segment of The George Show. Jamming to a little Jingle Bell Rock in this December, 3 weeks from, my gosh, yesterday. We'll be celebrating a little Christmas. I hope it's a white one, just because I miss that. We don't get that all the time here in Colorado. My thanks, by the way, to all of our guests that were on the show today, Dr. Benjamin Raby. If you didn't get a chance to listen to that, super informational, maybe it's informative, about the vaccines that are coming out for COVID-19. Go back and listen to that in the podcast. We also had Jim Alsom, great listener, who called in to talk about the role he played in helping to search through Civil Air Patrol for the wreckage from the Rocky Mountain Airlines Flight 217 from 42 years ago today that crashed up in Steamboat Springs. We had State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg. Great conversation about the very, very, very not so very special session of the legislature this past week. And then we had DEA Assistant Special Agent in Charge Dave Oleski to make another great segment, by the way. You got to go back and listen to all this on the podcast about fentanyl in the community. We had Dave Gruber from Aurora City Council telling us about a study session on Monday that is set to formally make Aurora a sanctuary city. I'd say about formally. And also, what's that? And then also to take us to a place where Aurora is going to be paying for attorneys for illegal aliens to fight their deportation and ICE hearings. And then, of course, we had Joe Altman who came on. And there's just too much to talk about with Joe. I didn't think I would miss it all, but I couldn't get it all done in one segment. Just too many things that he's doing, too much information he has, and I just don't have enough questions. But he's been on a ton, and we're going to have him on again. Now, listen, I've been telling you about Joe and his business for a long, long time. His business is called Pin Business Network. I've toured these places. He just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And you can hear why. Dude's a data-driven guy. He's an expert in these areas. He can also turn that expertise in data into something positive for your business. It's not just by chance that Ernst & Young nominated him to be a finalist for Entrepreneur of the Year for the Mountain Desert region. His company's done great work during this COVID, helping businesses thrive, even though we have these government-imposed lockdowns. He supports the American dream. You can hear that in his voice, man. Dude is all about liberty. If it's not the Republican Party, it's certainly conservative principles, libertarian principles, and he can help your business grow. They focus on how to navigate your customer acquisition, keep your business going strong. PIN Business Network offers modern digital marketing solutions for your business, driven by data and inspired by the belief in the power of numbers. That's PIN right there, power in numbers. Call them today, pretty please, with sugar on top, 866-233-5705, 866-233-5705, or visit pinbusinessnetwork.com for more information. Look, a few minutes left. I want to bring you up to speed on something that happened last Sunday, and I talked about it here the day before on our show. I had a column published by the Denver Post that asked the question, what the hell is Governor Polis doing? Because it had been revealed that his health department, the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment, had rolled out a plan, not just on the internet to us, but submitted it to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention on how they wanted to roll out these life-saving vaccines. And in it, they had prioritized prisoners over the 65 and older community and immunocompromised adults who make up the most vulnerable part of our population for mortality from this disease, from this virus in the state of Colorado. I called him out on it. It actually got some traction. That post column ended up showing up on Fox News National. They had me on to talk about it. But the governor was asked about it by a reporter. And despite the fact that his public health department has put this out, it's still on their website. This is what he said.
The miracle of the survival of the people may be traced to the fresh snow, waist deep on the ground.
Nope. Let's try this one.
I would think that would include prisoners that are in that category, but the vast majority of people 65 and up are free. There's no way it's going to go to prisoners before it goes to people who haven't committed any crimes. That's obvious. So those are just false. Clearly, the actual proposal on how we're going to do it will be amended.
Now, that's interesting. Those claims are false, and yet then saying he has to have that proposal amended. The question that it raises right now, and I'm telling you, I have invited CDPHE on this show each of the last 3 weeks, and each of the last 3 weeks, they very politely said through their spokesperson, we just, gosh darn it, don't have anybody that can come on and answer these questions. They'll respond to some things in email, but never a dialogue like this. And I think the question that has to be asked is, what is going on? There's only a couple possibilities here. Either CDPHE is an entirely rogue organization that dreamed up this prioritization of prisoners over at-risk adults all by itself and never ran it by the governor, or they ran it by the governor and he said, no, that's crack smoke crazy, and they went ahead and did it anyway, or the governor was briefed on this and he just now realizes this looks awful to the community. And all of a sudden is pushed back hard and saying this was never the plan. It would never be the plan. By the way, we're going to have to amend the plan. I'm anxious to see what happens this week. The pitch now that the governor has made is this was just a silly little proposal place saver we had to put up there. It doesn't mean anything. Really? to the public? You put that out, a 100-page document that was submitted to CDC? Doesn't make any sense. I'm going to keep you informed of this. Go out to the Denver Post. Read that article first. Follow me, too, if you would, on Twitter, at George Brockler, B-R-A-U-C-H-L-E-R. And let's keep the conversation going. Up next, Liberty Esquire, Randy Corcoran, 710 KNUS.